in this world, we are just beginning to understand the miracle of living. Baby, I was afraid before. I'm not afraid anymore. Ooh, baby, do you know what that's worth? Ooh, heaven is a place on earth. They say in heaven, love comes first. And sometimes not at all. Ooh. Hey guys, this is Rish Outfield, and this is an... Is this a whole episode? Remember when I used to do addendums to previous episodes? I like that. But I guess I just did a dumb song, and so... this is the start of a whole new episode. Dang it. Well, anyway, who cares, right? I'm driving. I don't have a long drive ahead of me, so there's no way I'll finish this. Oh, I had something super brief. That's why I wanted. I thought, oh, well, I can do that. Here, let me grab my recorder. It is nearing the end of 2016. And if you're me, you think about what a failure you were in 2016. You think about how you lost a lot of stuff this year. Car, job, parent, mind. But you gotta soldier on. You gotta. I'm just about done with another story. In fact, right here where I'm sitting, I came out today to the car. Oh, it was a Sunday dinner at my mom's house, and she had said 12:30, I believe, we were gonna do lunch today, dinner. Usually it's like late, it's 2:30, 3 o'clock, sometimes even 4 o'clock, but today it was early. And so I got there at about 12:25 or something like that, and I was the first one there. And so instead of getting out and going in and socializing, I just stayed in the car and I got my magic notebook out and I started writing. I'm trying to finish up a story. I have a deadline midnight tomorrow, really. I mean, it doesn't matter. There's always a grace period on these stories. But, you know, I was trying to get it in when I could. So I just sat here and I wrote until my uncle arrived. And I was waiting for my sister to show up, and she never did. So finally, I just put down the notebook and I went in. But the story that I'm writing came to me... Well, you know... Is it worth going into detail of where it came from? The punchline, the thing that I'm building toward is, I'm not sure it's good at all. In fact, it may suck. Now, I've written enough stories that I'm sure that there are some stinkers out there, 3 or 4 or 10. And my guess is that every writer has some stinkers in them. I will remind you of that old Spanish proverb, Aún Spielberg hizo Hook. It's a famous, I believe, 16th century, although it could be 17th century proverb that's relevant all the time. And this story, I've still got to finish it. Whether it sucks or not, I've got to finish it, because all stories that are unfinished are worse than suck. I know that's not correct English, but you know what I'm saying. The worst finished story is better than the best unfinished story in the world. With the sole exception of The Mystery of Edwin Drood, for some reason, I don't know. Somebody demanded that I put an asterisk there, and that's it. So... Here's the deal, yo. I am going to try and finish that story, whether it sucks or not. I have to do it. Well, I remember when an announcer man would say, we have to do it. Then, you know, I can just forget about it and go on to the next story, because that's what I usually do. But I was thinking about it. Okay, you know, I write a story, and what if it does suck? What if it's just terrible. What can be learned from that? And then I thought, am I a good enough storyteller? Am I a good enough writer to look at that story, the one that sucks, and say, this is why it doesn't work, and this is where I went wrong with it? For example, when the idea first came into my head, it was going to be about a man whose wife left him. And fear of a negative reaction forced me to change the sexes of the two main characters. And so it's a woman whose husband left her. Still the same story. I think 85 to 90% of the story would remain the same, because people are people, guys. So why should it be you and I should get along so awfully? Well done. We did that thing together again there. You owe me a gram of Coke. Oh, the reason I mentioned that is maybe that's where it went wrong. If the story sucks. I'm not going to brand it a story that sucks yet, because, you know, it could end up being nothing. Like I said, worse than suck. I'm going to trademark that. Worse than suck. The audio fiction of Rish Outfield. It'll be my 15 least favorite stories brought to you by Lucky Charms cereal. The greatest of all cereals. By General Mills. Anyhow, kids and adults, an interesting experiment would be, take a story that I know sucks, that I recognize is not good, and try and rewrite it so that it doesn't. Take this story that I wrote that I feel like, oh, it's a failure, it's not good, or whatever. What would need to be done for it to be better? For it to be good? And maybe nothing can be done. Do you know what I mean? Back when Jeff and I used to review horror films, I would always say it's way worse when you watch a really bad horror movie that had the seed or the potential for a really good horror movie in it than when you watched something that was just utter crap. Because, you know, the utter crap stuff you can just dismiss, you can laugh at, you can turn off in disgust. But when you recognize, oh shoot, that last scene, dang, man, there for a moment there, I thought I knew where it was going, and I thought, oh, this is going to be scary, and it wasn't. Or one of those things where with somebody competent behind the camera, or, you know, another draft of the script. That's something that I say a lot when Big and I talk about movies that aren't good, aren't great. I always say, you know, one more draft, and I think it would have been there. Now, that's presuming that, again, the writer recognizes what the failings are, recognizes what the flaw in the project is, and they work to resolve those points. And you know, it's really hard to find what's wrong with what you're writing. Especially if you worked on it, if you put a lot of yourself into it. I'm reminded of the very first screenplay that I wrote. And I finished it, and that was a monumental accomplishment. The feeling I had finishing that first screenplay was greater than the feeling I had when I wrote my first novel, when I finished that. And so I handed it into my screenwriting professor, and he had read it, and he was very complimentary, and he said, you know, with just a few changes, I think this would be a very solid film. And I was like, wow, that's awesome. I mean, I've already told that part of the story, but he said, you know, I would change this and this and this. And it's not, you know, I would make it so that the revelation comes on page 60 instead of page 80 or whatever, something easily fixed. It was the idea is good. I just want you to change the story. And I realized at the time that it was, oh, wow, he's asking me to write a whole new script. And I don't want to. I accomplished this. I wrote what I wanted to. Now I have other ideas, and I'd kind of like to go on to another screenplay. And so I never incorporated any of the stuff that he said. I never even jotted down any of those notes. A lot of what he was recommending, I felt like, well, that sounds like a sequel, man. That sounds like, okay, this is the next step of what happens in these characters' lives. I don't know. I think that that's very... Well, it's intriguing, the idea of taking something that is broken and trying to fix it. For example, I remember when I lived in L.A., there was this big movement, and it only lasted for, you know, 6 years or so, but there was this big movement of fixing the Star Wars prequels through editing. You know, the Phantom edit, the Superior edit, the Force edit, or whatever it is, you know. People would take these movies that were flawed, and, you know, there's still a generation that doesn't think that they're flawed, or there's a generation that has developed that think that they're not bad. But for my generation, yeah, that was our Vietnam, kids. And they would try and take these flawed films and fix them. For example, the character of Jar Jar was really divisive. Almost no one wholly embraced Jar Jar. And part of the problem that most people have with him was just that he was bumbling. He, in an attempt to be comedic, he was just irritating and stupid. So one of those online editors thought, okay, well, what we'll do is we will create a Gungan language for Jar Jar and replace all of his dialogue with it. And then through subtitles, like you would with Jabba the Hutt or Greedo, we will translate what he has to say and fix all of his dialogue. And so he became like this mystic character in theory. In practice, he was still physically bumbling. He was still physically trying to be comedic. And it became sort of a contradiction, like Revenge of the Sith. The whole movie is a contradiction. You know, there are things that you could do to minimalize some of the problems with the Phantom Menace, I guess, is what we're talking about here. But it was only in snipping. It was only in cutting things out, removing things. You couldn't very well add to it. I've heard several people's theories on, you know, what would have fixed that movie, how you could make that movie better. But what's wrong with the Star Wars prequels is not something as easy as, we'll lift this scene, remove this banal line of dialogue. There's logic problems. There is formatting, structure problems. There's problems in character. Could you fix the Star Wars prequels? Technically, yes. But it would require making all new movies. And I remember once I had a conversation with Big Anklevich, and he said, you know, 20, 30 years from now, somebody will do that. They will just say, okay, we're going to restart Star Wars, and we're going to make all new movies telling that same story, and they'll fix it. They'll learn from the mistakes of 1999 through 2005. And yeah, that would be interesting. If you're making an all new movie, can you look at something that is broken and say, okay, we're going to fix this and this and this. This we're not even going to port over. This is gone. This actually kind of works. So we will leave that, or, you know, at least try to imitate that. And yeah, Biggs mentioned it several times since then that, you know, that's going to happen someday. Yeah, bully for them. I mean, if they handed it to me, I would do it, but it would be hard, and you'd have to stay off the internet, and you just have to go with your gut, because no two people will tell you the same thing is wrong with those three movies. Now, granted, there is a big segment of the population like me who would love to tell you what's wrong with those three movies. They'll talk your ear off. But fixing it is a different story. Everyone would fix it in a different way. Everyone, you know, in the same way that, okay, I finish the story and I hand it to five different writers and I say, you know what? I'm going to pay each of you X, let's say $200, to rewrite this story so that it no longer sucks. What would be fascinating would be to read those five different stories and see how they diverge, see how they're similar, see what they retain from what I wrote and what they would throw out. They would be fascinating. I don't have $500, or did I say I would pay everybody $100, or was it more than that? I don't know. I'm losing my mind since it was only a minute ago I said the number, but I don't know. That sort of stuff is just fascinating to me. The process, the trying to fix. My buddy Jeff and I went to an amusement park right around Halloween, you know, around the end of, well, during the fall. And to amuse ourselves while we were standing for hours in line, we talked about how we would create the Universal Monsters shared universe. Now, maybe by the time you're hearing this, that's already happened. Universal has restarted that franchise, but with a franchise in mind from the very beginning. And you know, that's super important, because you can lay breadcrumbs, you can develop characters, you cannot paint yourself into a corner if you know that, okay, eventually we're going to have 8 to 15 movies here. And boy, we poured over it, because we were in line, of course, for hours. When you go to an amusement park, the thing that you spend the most time doing is waiting to get on a ride. And there's nothing I like more than a big line of cocaine. Oh, nope, we're back on the cocaine. There's nothing I like more than, yeah, just talking about movies, talking about stories, talking about how I would do something, trying to develop ideas, especially when I'm with somebody who is creative or passionate or both. And we just talked about certain things that we'd poured over from the 1930s and 40s Universal horror movies, and things that we would create that would be unique, and, you know, introducing a character who we know will be important later and all that stuff. And yeah, that is fun, but it's also going to be frustrating when the Universal shared universe monster movies start coming out and they don't go in that direction. Now, they could be way, way better than what Jeff and I came up with. I mean, purely by virtue of having somebody at the helm who cares about it and has put more time than Jeff and I did. I mean, Jeff and I put in, what, 3 hours, 4 hours just talking about it, about, okay, now how do you introduce the creature from the Black Lagoon? Okay, China demands that you have some kind of Asian actor. What do we do? And I said, Chow Yun-Fat. Chow Yun-Fat is the only acceptable actor in any of these. In fact, Chow Yun-Fat is the only acceptable Chinese port over in any movie. And the people around me in the line were like, what is this guy talking? Oh, they got out their cell phones and they dialed 9-1 and were just waiting for me to finish my rant so that they could press the other one and send. I don't know. As it stands, this is all a moot point, because the story that I'm talking about, that sucks. A, it's not finished, but B, it might not even suck. It might just be that I don't know what I've got till it's gone. Right now it's several pieces. I've written it whenever I get a moment free, and maybe once I put it all together and I'm able to massage a little bit the structure, the feel of it, you know, make sure all the dialogue is consistent and stuff, maybe then it will be better. Maybe it won't suck at all. I mean, that's the best case scenario, right? I mean, no, the best case scenario is this: if somebody beautiful came up to me and said, hey, I read that story. I loved that. I feel like you wrote that for me. We're talking about best case scenarios, right? Hey, guys, I thought I'd throw this in at the end of the episode. Anything to make it, you know, more bang for your buck, right? I just got in the car. I passed a guy just now, and he had a shirt. It was a middle-aged guy, and he had a T-shirt, and it said, "You can't scare me. I'm the father of two teenagers." It was amusing. But then I thought about it, and I thought, well, but that's awfully specific. A, you know, it's only for a man to wear. And, you know, B, only for a father to wear. And only for a father that has two kids between the ages of 13 and, I don't know, 9, whatever teenage is. And he has to have two. So that was, like I said, awfully specific. Anyhow, kids, it reminded me of, okay, that's a lie. It didn't remind me. I was already going to record this, but I saw the guy and I thought I'd mention it. I've been deliberately wasting your time. I apologize. This year, I've really been trying to publish more stuff. I guess one of my major goals was to get items out of the notebook or items that are just sitting on my hard drive and make them available. People can buy them. I really ought to grab a couple of very short ones and just make them available for free. But yeah, that kind of feels like that time that you spent might have been better spent doing something else when you don't even intend for it to have a dollar sign attached to it. See, now that I have this Patreon thing, suddenly these Rish Outcasts are no longer a waste of everybody's time. They're just a waste of your time. I get money for them because people support me on Patreon. That just astounds me, but it's great because I was going to do the episodes anyway, but now that there's a reward for every one that I put out, it's just made me think, okay, you know what? It's been 7 days. I better get the next one ready to go. And that, holy cow, that's been great with motivation. Speaking of which, and that's what I'm talking about. Good Lord, guys. Why do you listen to my show? I think psychiatrists would just get a thrill out of standing in a room and listening to the Rish Outcast, because they could all point to psychoses and abnormalities and things that they've studied about as they come up. One of the items that is now available for sale that has not been available before is called Varkolak, and it is the second Western that I ever wrote. First was Birth of a Sidekick back in 2005. 3 years later, Varkolak was finished, and I don't know how long it took me to write it, except for that it takes me less time nowadays. It's not just a pure Western. It's a Western with horror elements. It's a horror Western. It's a weird Western. It's a wild, wacky Western, woolly, wonderful waste of resources. Anyway, it is available. Varkolak. It's an unusual title, I know. But hopefully you will appreciate that by the time you reach the end of the story. I did the text version years ago. I it was one that I typed up rather than wrote in my notebook, I believe. I must have had a job where I was stuck in front of a computer at the time, and it enabled me to write that way. And then I just sat on it for years. Didn't touch it, didn't open it. Big Anklevich was the only person to have ever read it, and was not thrilled. So it just stayed. And then here we are in 2017, and I was like, okay, I'm going to get this one out, and I'm going to look it over, and I'm going to publish it. And then after that, I started work on the audio version, of course. And I did a search on Amazon, because you have to do a search. Everything that you create in audio on Audible has to be available on Amazon. There's no way around it. So for like my audio collections, I actually physically make a text version, publish that, assert the title. That's the word they use for when you say, this is my book. And then I remove the text version after I'm done, after the process is done. Anyway, on this one, and you're wondering, wait, why? Why would you do that? Because it's an audio collection. It's audio only. I don't know. You're right. I'm dumb. But there are going to be text collections and there are going to be audio collections. And I'm going to do both, but not the same ones. Anyhow, let me finish the story, okay? So you can go out there and buy it. I had to assert my title. I had to find Varkulak. And so I typed it in, and holy cow, a bunch of returns came up. There are other books called Varkulak and stories with Varkulak in the title. I would never have guessed that. I realized, because all these others came up, that I must not have published it, that I'd gotten it ready to go, and I never published it. But that has been remedied now. I guess the reason I told you that part was because it's an unusual title, a Varkulak. I told Big that I was finally publishing that, and he said, that's what you called that? And he was right. It's an odd word, but not so odd that a bunch of other returns under that title didn't come up. Anyway, audio is done. Western kind of thing. Again, Western horror this time. I was looking in my notebook yesterday, in a notebook, I have many. I'm finally typing up that story that I promised years ago. There was a listener that really wanted to hear, or it was a guy that read my blog that really wanted to read it. And so I'm finally getting it done. And I was looking for it in the notebook, and I found a Western, it's not a vampire story, but It's a Western story about a demon in a human body, and the human body ages at an accelerated rate, and so he has to absorb the life force of others to maintain his body. But he only absorbs the life of evil men. And if he ever were to try it with a good man, it would take the life force from him. And I was just like, holy cow, that's a Western too. Weird. I guess it's something that I just keep going back to over and over again. And it's got to be because of my dad. He just loved Westerns so much and knew so much about them. It brought him joy in the same way as, you know, seeing a horny teenager get his head cut off with a machete brings me joy in a horror movie. Anyway, Varkulak is out there. It's about an 11-year-old boy. Yeah, write what you know. In Colorado, he's on a cattle ranch, and these strangers come through town from the old country, from Eastern Europe, and they bring death with them, really, is the story. I don't know. It's always so hard for me to tell people this is good and you ought to buy it, or I think it's good and I think you would like it. And of course I can't do that now either, except for that there were a couple of moments in the story where I thought, you know, this part at least is solid. This part I really like. You know, that's as close to California Rish as you're going to get in this episode. Check it out. Varkulak is how you spell that word. And it's available in both audio and in text. I would appreciate it if you bought it, and I would appreciate it even more if you liked it. So thanks. Go your way. Okay, so I'm either going to slap this onto an already producing episode in which case now I am gone. Or it's its own episode. And so here, I thank you for listening. Go out and buy my stories. If you'd like, go out and buy Newfound Fame. Go out and buy The Calling, the audio fiction of Rish Outfield. Go out and buy Into the Furnace. Go out and buy yourself something nice, kid. Here you go. And I've been Rish Outfield. This has been the Rish Outcast. Hit it, Sir Fiction.
The Rish Outcast was produced under a Creative Commons 3.0 license, which makes it free to listen to, share, and poke fun at. But the podcast cannot be altered or sold. If you didn't completely despise this episode, why don't you support the show with our Patreon fund over at patreon.com? Every dollar gives me more strength to put Outfield in his place.
All right, I'm going to do Waiting for a Star to Fall in the style of Boy Meets Girl. This is foolish, isn't it? I hear your name whispered on the wind. It's a sound that makes me cry. I hear a song blow again and again through my mind. And I don't know why. I wish I didn't feel so strong about you. Like happiness and love revolve around you. Trying to catch your heart is like trying to catch a star. So many people love you, baby.
That must be what you are.
Waiting for a star to fall and carry your heart into my arms. That's where you belong, in my arms, baby, yeah. Waiting for a star to fall and carry your heart into my arms. That's where you belong, baby, in my arms, yes. I've learned to feel what I cannot see, but with you, I lose that vision. I don't know how to dream your dream, so I'm all caught up in a superstition. I want to reach out and pull you to me. Who says I should let a wild one go free? Trying to catch your heart is like trying to catch a star. But I can't love you this much, baby, and love you from this far. I'm waiting for a star to fall and carry your heart into my arms. That's where you belong, in my arms, baby, yeah. Waiting. I don't like waiting. I've waited for you. It's so hard waiting. It seems like waiting makes me love you even more. I'm not sure I have the energy to go all the way to the end on this song. It's nice. There was a moment there when I was surprised by how good it was. I'm supposed to complain about the songs, but of course, I wouldn't be singing them if I didn't like every bloody one of these. I wanted fake Arnold Schwarzenegger, but they didn't do it. So let's finish it off. Waiting for a star to fall and carry your heart into my arms. That's where you belong, in my arms, baby, yeah. Waiting for a star to fall, carry your heart in my arms. That's where you belong, baby, yeah. Oh, I blew it. Waiting for a star to fall. That's where your arms belong. That's where you belong, in my arms, baby, yeah. Waiting for a star to fall. Carry your heart into my arms. That's where you belong, in my arms, baby, yeah.
please tell me you've faded it by this point.
Yes.
Well, they can't all be winners, folks. Or any of them.
Shoot. Is this place open or closed? Give me 1.5 minutes to check. Okay? Just... Hey, none of that, R2. Just one moment. We'll be right back after these commercial messages. It's the second time I've done that, where I just leave the thing running while I go into a store. It's irresponsible. In fact, I very well may burn in hell for it. So, point I was trying to make, which was,